So I told you that she stole my sermon, right? So so we're going to give it a go. And let me just paint the picture for you a little bit more deeply. I'll begin like this, though. You're probably going to think it's a little petty of me, though. This past week when we were back in Texas, the craziest thing happened. First time it's ever happened in my life. Craziest thing. I literally got everything I asked for. Everything. The trick, I bet, is that I didn't ask for much. I asked for three things, and they were all low-dollar items. So that's how you get it, apparently. Don't ask for much. I got everything on my list. I got a new pour-over coffee maker. It's a V60, it's a Hario, if you know these things. If you go to, like, you know, Target or something like this and you see the one that looks like an hourglass, it's not that one. All right, this is the one that's like white, ceramic, goes on top of a mug. It's delicious. Well, not it's it makes delicious coffee. You should chat. We'll talk about these what if questions, and I'll make you a pot of coffee. So I got a pour over. I got Dallas Stars hockey tickets. If you don't know who the Dallas Stars are, you are missing out. I got hockey tickets. Sarah and I went, and they lost, which was depressing. That's true. But I didn't ask for them to win. I just asked for tickets. And so next year, I'm going to be more specific. All right? And then the third thing I asked for was my mother-in-law's taco soup. And I'm serious about this. I put that on my list. Sarah asked me, my mom wants to know what you want for Christmas. And I said, all I want is her taco soup. It's what I look forward to. All right, it used to be that I would get like turkey for lunch and then we go somewhere else and I get turkey for dinner. But once I came into Sarah's family, it was taco soup for lunch. And then the next meal was turkey. And so I could actually enjoy both things. All right, and her taco soup is in this bread bowl. And you mix it with guacamole, which is like good guacamole, and it is, and like sour cream and cheese, and it just sort of seeps into the bread, and you're just like, this is the best thing on the planet. I swear, it really is. So much that I put it on my Christmas list. All right, so I got my three things. All right, I got my three things. We got more than those three things, though, obviously, because I have two kids. And one of the things Sarah and I have realized since we've started flying down to Texas for Christmas is it's dangerous because you take three bags and you always come back with more. For instance, for some reason, my brother and sister-in-law decided to give Emma an easy-bake oven. They didn't ship it to us. They made us, put it back on the plane. And I'm sitting there literally Thursday morning before we fly out trying to figure out how do I pack all of this stuff, all right? What do I do with this? So I have this Easy Bake oven. So if next week you find Easy Bake brownies out there in Coffee K, you have me to thank, all right? Your nostalgia is because I'm good at Tetris, all right? That's what happened here. So that's the thing, right? Not a terribly practical gift on my perspective. Which is sort of like what this is going on up here. And speaking of impractical gifts, all right, there's a number of these cartoons. How many of you have seen this cartoon? All right, a number of you. Linda Wise actually sent this to me, which I thought was hilarious because it's about the three wise women and she has three daughters and there was a play on words, and I thought that's clever. I loved it. And so anyways, that's great. The caption says, after the three wise men came, the three wise women came and did it better or something like this. So they bring fresh diapers and casseroles and lots of formula. There are other versions of this cartoon. One of my favorites has them bringing not just, diapers and casseroles and formula, but wine and a nanny. And I thought, that's got it, right? There are some practical gifts right there. To Matthew's credit, though, our gospel writer for the day, when he's talking about gold and frankincense and myrrh, right? He's not just talking about gold and frankincense and myrrh. All right, these aren't just strange random gifts to give to a baby, right? They're symbols. There's a story behind each of them. They're meant to tell us something more than what's on the surface. If you haven't read Matthew's version of the Christmas story in a while, I actually don't blame you. Nobody goes to Matthew to read the Christmas story. We all go to Luke. In Matthew, as we just found out, we don't get any of the manger. There are no donkeys. There are no animals. There are no shepherds. There's not really any angels proclaiming the coming of the Lord. You get Joseph, who has a dream, and God tells him in a dream, don't put Mary away, keep her, because the baby in her is mine, which has just all sorts of weirdness written all over it. And then we get one line, and Mary had a baby in Bethlehem. And then we get our story of the three kings, the wise men, the magi. All right, so Matthew is weird like this. There's nothing about John the Baptist jumping up in the, you know, in the womb, in Elizabeth's womb when he's, you know, comes into the presence of Jesus in Mary's room. There's nothing about that. There's no breaking into song because Mary finds out that she's going to be the mother of God. In fact, if Luke's story sometimes reads like a Disney musical, all right, then Matthew's story is more like Cormac McCarthy's The Road. Do y'all know Cormac McCarthy? Blood Meridian? No Country for Old Men? Does that work? All right, I'm hitting a few. Think dark, dreary, and things that Jason would like to read. All right, that's for you, Paula. All right, and so this is Matthew. All right, this is his Christmas story. Right after the Magi leave Bethlehem, so right after our story for today, an angel of the Lord appears to Joseph again in a dream and tells him to flee to Egypt because Herod, the king, is about to go on a killing spree. He's about to go and attempt this mad attempt to kill all of the children who might have been Jesus, this supposed king of the Jews that was born. That's what he's after. And an angel comes and tells Joseph, you gotta get out of here. Go to Egypt. And then Herod dies, and the angel goes, you can come back now. And that's really the end of the Christmas story. There's not much singing going on here. This is what we get. For a long time, the church has associated the story of the three wise men with the end of the Christmas season and the beginning of Epiphany, though. The assumption seems to be that we do this because Epiphany is supposed to be about how the good news of Jesus Christ is for the whole world. And the three wise men come from the east. They symbolize that whole world. There's some truth to this. After all, Matthew tells us that they're not of this place, right? They're outsiders. He gives them weird names, magi, which are these sort of like foreign astrologers and astronomers. We translate wise men because we don't like the idea of association with astrology, I think. They're Gentiles, all right? And there's really no denying that Matthew as a whole wants us to see the gospel going out to the whole world. Matthew's the gospel that ends with Jesus telling his friends, go into all the nations and baptize them. All right? Go. He gives that great commission. Go into all the nations and make disciples. All right? But the story of the three wise men, it's not really as much interested in where they come from. It's more interested in why they come at all. And the reason they come is locked up right there in those three gifts, in gold and frankincense and myrrh. So why gold and frankincense and myrrh? Why bring these three gifts? They seem exceedingly impractical for a baby shower, at least, right? The first is pretty easy. Gold we associate, yes, with kings, all right? It's for the longest time been associated with kings. And so by bringing the baby Jesus a gift of gold, they're proclaiming him king. Frankincense is a little bit harder. I remember when my dad was fighting a brain tumor. And there came a point when he started taking frankincense. My mom had heard somewhere that there was a possible connection between frankincense and tumor reduction. But a lot of things, as a lot of those things are during terminal illnesses like that, a lot of things you try are really prayers. Their use of frankincense was that. It was a prayer. It's this sort of, what we might say, a physical expression of my parents' belief that God was even bigger than that cancer. As Debbie told us, frankincense is a resin, all right? And resin, as most of you probably know, is usually flammable in a number of its forms. And so it's one reason why it was used as an incense. You could burn it, and it gives off this rather pungent, I've heard it described almost as a balsamic smell. A balsamic smell, and it was used in sacrifices in the Israelite temple, probably still used in the Jewish temple of Jesus' time. In the book of Exodus, God tells Moses to make a special perfume using frankincense and a number of other spices, and he was supposed to set it apart as holy. The picture seems to be that Moses would pick up the perfume when he entered into the presence of God and put it on so that he would be set apart in some sense for God. All right, that's why the wise men bring this gift, bring frankincense. They give it to Jesus. And it's more than just them saying that Jesus is a priest. It's them saying that Jesus is God. This is set apart because it's God's. If you read through Matthew's story, Matthew makes a point that pretty much everything that happens is in some sense a fulfillment of all these prophecies that we hear in the Old Testament. From the fact that Jesus' mom was born, well, was a virgin, to the fact that he was being born in Bethlehem, to even his escape into Egypt and the comeback, all of these are fulfilled prophecies, Matthew tells us. He wants us to know that all of this was part of God's plan. It's part of God's wisdom. The gifts of gold and frankincense are included in this. This is why the liturgy gives us Isaiah 60 to read alongside of Matthew 2. If you remember, the end of it is all these nations of the world coming to Jerusalem to see the king. And here's what it says. A multitude of camels shall come to you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah, the people from Sheba. If you remember the queen of Sheba, the people from Sheba will bring gold and frankincense and will come worshiping the Lord. But it only mentions gold and frankincense. Matthew includes something else, that myrrh. And the reason is striking, as we found out. Myrrh was used to embalm. In fact, in John's gospel, we get the realization that myrrh was associated not just with any person's embalmment, but with Jesus's. Nicodemus brings, John tells us, a mixture of myrrh and aloes, along with a bunch of linen cloth to wrap Jesus's body in after they take him from the cross. I think we'd have to say that if you're Mary and Joseph, and somebody brings you myrrh for your baby child, it's a strange gift. It's a strange gift. You might even say it's something of a sad joke. But in Matthew's context, it's an epiphany. It's an epiphany. The wise men aren't just wise because they're astronomers or astrologers and they know to follow a star. They're wise because they see the baby Jesus for who he really is. He's a king. He's God. But he's not just a king and God. He's a fragile human being, one who is going to die. And that's what Epiphany is all about. It's about the fact that God, the King of heaven and earth, became human to die for us and the whole world. Epiphany celebrates this fact. It celebrates the fact that the central and the most crucial way that God has revealed God's self to us is through a baby born to die. This is why we sometimes call the first day of Epiphany, today, the climax of Christmas. Today we remember that Jesus wasn't just some run-of-the-mill Messiah. The ancient Jews had these coming up. There were quite a few of them before Jesus. And I think we'd have to say there's been quite a few of them since, and not just in the Jewish world. All right, we get these sort of pseudo-messiahs, but Jesus is something fundamentally different. Jesus was and still is God made flesh. God become human, the one we call Emmanuel, God with us, the one who dwells among us in order to die like us so that he might deliver us from the sin and death that hound us. There's a saying often used about the founding fathers of America. It's said that they built better than they knew. Did y'all know this saying? They built better than they knew. It's said that when our founding fathers put together the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they had no idea how long it would last or how well it could speak to the changing times, but they ended up building it better than they knew. I think we can say the same thing for Matthew's wise men. That Christmas morning, or 2 weeks later, when the wise men gave not only frankincense and gold, but also myrrh, they gave better than they knew. At the beginning of his letter to the Corinthians, the Apostle Paul asks the right question. He asks, "Where is the one who is wise? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For Jews demand signs and Greeks desire wisdom, but we proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles, but to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than our wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than our strength." Friends, Epiphany. Epiphany is the day when we are reminded that God knew what he was doing, that the wise men gave better than they knew. It's the day when we are reminded that even though there might still be Herods in this world, even though there might still be those who try to rule with an iron fist of terror or coercion, that the God we worship is stronger, that the God we worship is wiser. Epiphany is the day when we are reminded that our hope for the new year is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. It's the day when we are reminded that knowing and following that light in the darkness, won't always be easy, it won't always be safe, but it will always be right, and it will always be good. It's the day when we are reminded that we worship not just the God of the universe or the King of this world, but the incarnate one who loved us enough to die for us. It's the day when we are reminded that our God is not just a God of gold or of frankincense. Our God is also a God of myrrh. And so Epiphany is the day that we're reminded that even though we may be fools, we're wise fools. And that makes all the difference in the world.